Well, all right, gang. By gosh, Grandma and I got up to chores this morning, and this is the 1st of November, 2002, and you could about bog a saddle blanket around anywhere in the yard, so maybe it'd be time to kind of huddle up and start a new book, shall we? This is a book about a veterinarian in Yorkshire, England. The title of the book is All Creatures Great and Small by James Herriot. Several of you kids have asked me to read this, so let's kind of get started on it, see where it goes. Chapter 1. They didn't say anything about this in the books, I thought, as the snow blew in through the gaping doorway and settled on my naked back. I lay face down on the cobbled floor in a pool of nameless muck, my arm deep inside the straining cow, my feet scrabbling for a toehold between the stones. I was stripped to the waist, and the snow mingled with the dirt and the dried blood on my body. I could see nothing outside the circle of the flickering light thrown by the smoky oil lamp which the farmer held over me. No, there wasn't a word in the books about searching for your ropes and instruments in the shadows, about trying to keep clean in a half bucket of tepid water, about the cobble digging into your chest, nor about the slow numbing of the arm. The creeping paralysis of the muscles as the fingers tried to work against the cow's powerful, expulsive efforts. There was no mention anywhere of the gradual exhaustion, the feeling of futility, and the little far-off voice of panic. My mind went back to that picture in the obstetrics book, a cow standing in the middle of a gleaming floor with a sleek veterinary surgeon in a spotless parturition overhaul, inserted his arm into a polite distance. He was relaxed and smiling. The farmer and his helpers were smiling. Even the cow was smiling. There was no dirt or blood or sweat anywhere. That man in the picture had just finished an excellent lunch and had moved next door to do a bit of calving, just for the sheer pleasure of it, as a kind of dessert. He hadn't crawled shivering from his bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and bumped over 12 miles of frozen snow, staring deep, sleepily ahead till the lonely farm showed in the headlights. He hadn't climbed half a mile of white fellside to the doorless barn where his patient lay. I tried to wriggle my arm in an extra inch inside the cow. Calf's head was back, and I was painfully pushing a thin loop rope toward its lower jaw with my fingertips. All the time, my arm was being squeezed between the calf and the bony pelvis. With every straining effort from the cow, the pressure became almost unbearable. Then she would relax, and I would push the rope another inch. I wondered how long I would be able to keep this up. If I didn't snare that jaw soon, I would never get the calf away. I groaned and set my teeth and reached forward again. Another little flurry of snow blew in, and I could almost hear the flakes sizzling on my sweaty back. There was sweat on my forehead, too, and it trickled into my eyes as I pushed. There is always a time at bad calving when you begin to wonder if you'll ever win the battle. I had reached this stage. Little speeches began to flit through my brain. Perhaps it would be better to slaughter this cow. Her pelvis is so small and narrow that I can't see a calf coming through, or she's a good fat animal and really of the beef type, so don't you think it would be better to get the butcher? Or perhaps this is a very bad presentation. In a roomy cow, it would be simple. You'd have to bring the head about, but in this case, it is just about impossible. Of course, I could have delivered the calf by embryotomy, by passing wire over the neck and sawing off the head. So many of these occasions ended with the floor strewn with the heads, legs, and heaps of intestines. There were thick textbooks devoted to the countless ways you could cut up a calf. But none of it was any good here, because this calf was alive. At my furthest stretch, I had gotten my finger as far as the commissure of the mouth and had been startled by a twitch of the little creature's tongue. It was unexpected, because calves in this position are usually dead, asphyxiated by the acute flexion of the neck and the pressure of the dam's powerful contractions. But this one had a spark of life in it, and it came out and it would be in one piece. I went over to my bucket of water, cold now and bloody, and silently soaked my arms. Then I lay down again, feeling the cobblestones harder than ever against my chest. I worked my toes between the stones, shook the sweat from my eyes, and for the 100th time thrust an arm that felt like spaghetti into the cow, alongside the little dry legs of the calf, like sandpaper tearing against my flesh, then to the bend of the neck and so to the ear, and then, agonizingly along the side of the face, towards the lower jaw, which had become my major goal in life. It was incredible that I had been doing this for nearly 2 hours, fighting as my strength ebbed to push a little noose around that jaw. I had tried everything else, propeller in the leg, gentle traction, with a blunt hook in the eye socket, but I was back to the noose. It had been a miserable session all through. The farmer, Mr. Dinsdale, was a long, sad, silent man of few words who always seemed to be expecting the worst to happen. He had a long, sad, silent son with him, and two of them.